Welcome back to this second hour of Leading Edge Medicine. Leading Edge Medicine provides only general medical information. Since everyone's individual situation is unique, you should consult your own physician before taking any action related to your personal health. All content of this program is intended for general informational purposes only. Good morning and welcome to Leading Edge Medicine with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat. Leading Edge Medicine is sponsored by Longevity Medical Clinics and is devoted to helping you feel and function better tomorrow than you do today by providing the newest and most advanced medical care designed to improve both your body and your brain. Leading Edge Medicine will keep you informed regarding the very latest developments in science and medicine while highlighting some of the Northwest's most prominent physicians. All while helping you separate the science from the silly and the facts from the fiction. This is live call-in radio at its very best, giving you the opportunity to participate in the show. Now, here are your hosts for Leading Edge Medicine, Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samira Umat, along with their co-host, Lynette Morgan.
And we're back. It's hour number two of Leading Edge Medicine. Hi there and good morning. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. We're talking with Ken from Vashon Island about stem cells, and he had a great question for you.
Okay, well, here's what I would do to increase your stem cell count as high as practical at your age, and also to get rid of those senescent stem cells and help to rescue them and make them as vital as possible so that, you know, we're not going to take you back to 20, but we want to get what you've got as viable as possible. There are several things we know that inhibit stem cell function, and one is cellular senescence. And so we have a program designed specifically to decrease senescent cells in your body, and that will then disinhibit and allow healthy cells to grow and heal and repair more effectively. So okay. That's a 9-day course of therapy. It's 3 days each week for 3 weeks. And it's some fairly potent medications, but it seems to work very well. And you get a peak effect about 2 weeks after you finish your therapy, is when your senescent cells have finished dying off and you start growing your own stuff better. So I'd say you should talk to your longevity doctor about senescent cell therapy. The other thing, there are several medications that we know that improve stem cell function. One of them is simply resveratrol, okay, which we use on a wide variety of patients. Another is metformin. Metformin increases both kidney function and stem cell productivity. And the third one is rapamycin. So, and rapamycin, of course, is probably the closest we've got to a true anti-aging drug these days. It extends the lifespan of every animal it's ever been tested in. So, and we know that in humans, it lowers cancer risk. It improves kidney function. It improves, essentially every part of our bodies, better bone density, better everything. And we think it does that in part by rescuing stem cells so that your stem cells are better able to heal and repair you. So I'd say okay. Senescent cell therapy, rapamycin, metformin, resveratrol. Oh, and I'm sorry, one other, testosterone, which I'm pretty sure you're probably on since most of the men in the clinic are. Testosterone specifically increases stem cell viability in bone marrow. So it is really famous for helping bone marrow to have better stem cell counts.
And you said testosterone does this?
Testosterone does this, yes. You know, testosterone is designed to help you grow and heal and repair, and it lets muscle grow more efficiently in response to exercise. And one of the ways it does that is it increases stem cell function. So the stem cells that are allowing you to grow new tissue and turn over tissue efficiently are increased by the testosterone. And it's especially effective in bone marrow. Mm. So, you know, but it seems to help stem cell function in your entire body, but with a big emphasis on bone marrow. So testosterone, okay. Rapamycin, senescent cell therapy, resveratrol, metformin. Five interventions.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll call on Monday and see if I can't meet with the doctor on okay. that program.
Sounds
okay.
good.
Okay. Just one last question or something to add here. I had an ACL replaced 11, 12 years ago in my right knee, and I had DVT in the lower leg, and it went into a massive pulmonary embolism. I, eventually, they said I was going to have scar tissue forever. And they had me on warfarin and Xarelto and all. But I ended up having a doctor prescribe or say I should be on natokinase. And I did, and everything's cleared up. It was cleared up probably within a year's time of that. Now, how do you – now, will that affect – I'm still taking natokinase.
Okay.
I've been that whole time frame. Now, is that something that may adversely affect what I'm trying to achieve here also with the stem cell therapy? And
I don't know.
What other
– Yeah, okay. I've never seen a paper on an interaction between stem cell function and natokinase, but – I will look it up, see what I can find.
Okay. I appreciate that.
How much has been published? Okay. I have no idea. I may find lots of papers. I may find none, but I'll look.
Are you planning on staying on natokinase indefinitely?
I don't have any reason not to.
Okay.
Apparently, it has no negative side effects. It doesn't harm me in any way by taking it.
I wouldn't. Dr. Mixon's first rule of medicine: anything strong enough to help is strong enough to hurt. There's a downside to everything I've ever seen in medicine. I haven't looked carefully for one in natokinase, but I'm sure somewhere it can't be the only thing in the universe that has no downside. So we'll see.
Good. Can I get in touch with you again to find out if you found something on this? Because I'm very curious about that.
Sure. Yeah. Go to our website, lmclinic.com. Go to contact us and just write your concern. You know, say we talked about it on the radio and that I said to check with me. They route these because we get people that write in about everything from billing to whatever, and it gets routed to the right people. The medical ones come to me. Okay?
All right. Fantastic. Thank you very much. Appreciate your time.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Thank you for your call, Ken. All right. Another Ken, this time from Gig Harbor. Good morning, Ken. Welcome to Leading Edge Medicine.
Good morning. I have been a patient at Longevity since 2006. And yesterday, I was at a Pac-12 cross-country running championship down at Chambers Bay near Tacoma. About 5 minutes into the women's run, I had a feeling that somebody had come up with an ice pick and stuck me in the lower abdomen with an ice pick all the way to the core. And
oh,
so
my God.
I knew immediately what it was. It's probably a kidney stone. I've had them twice before. They're usually calcium oxalate. And I'm wondering, is there any way you can think of to dissolve or break those up more rapidly? Last time it took 3 weeks.
Oh,
the
boy.
First time and both times, actually.
Well, yes, there's a couple of things, really. Obviously, long-term, you know, diet that is low in oxalates. They used to say low in calcium, but calcium doesn't much matter anymore. It's the oxalate. There are a couple of things. Acidification of the urine. And whether it's done with lemon juice or apple cider vinegar or just good old-fashioned vitamin C, all will acidify the urine. The other thing is to get a quick mechanical relief. They actually now have a very small catheter. They pass up through the penis, through the bladder, out the ureter, and goes right up to the stone and hits it with a very focused either laser beam or with a sound wave transducer, and can break it into tiny, tiny pieces so that it'll pass on through.
How does the stone reduce in size? Does it wear away, dissolve, or does it break up in little pieces? Is it brittle or is it kind of soft?
Well, that depends. If they're using the sound wave transducers, they break it into smaller pieces. It's brittle. Okay. They actually pound it with sound waves until it breaks up. They used to do that extracorporeal where they would actually have the transducers outside the body and they kind of put you in a water bath and would hit you and try to focus it. Now they can actually put these tiny, tiny transducers right up against the stone and shoot it and break it up. So that's really kind of nice. Typically when a stone passes, it's not the stone that gives, it's the ureter. It's trapped in that ureter, and the ureter, you know, tries to stretch and let it through, and eventually with enough fluid put in pressure above it and the ureter finally giving up and giving way, you know, it comes on through. But it can be days or weeks of absolute misery waiting for that to happen. So if I've got a stone and it's not coming through quickly, I want somebody to go in and you know, blast the damn thing and get rid of it.
Yeah. I tried carbon dioxide water. I have a distiller and a carbonator plus lemon juice yesterday and didn't eat anything else. It seemed to help a little bit. So acidification is good, not bad. It's making
the
it
acidification
go away.
will basically slowly dissolve the stone as your urine is more acidic. But it takes a while. It's, you know, depending on the size and the shape of the stone and how acidic your urine gets and how much urine flow is there. And so, you know, lots of variables, but it will sometimes dissolve enough of the stone that it'll pass.
Uh-huh. I noticed that it hurts about the same if I lay down, sit up, stand up, walk, or jog. So if it hurts about the same each one, I might as well go jog and get some benefit.
Do your thing. Yeah, it's, you know, kidney stones are those things that everybody who's ever worked in an emergency room and sees the guy with the kidney stones come in, they're sitting, they roll, they stand, they lay, they sit, they're changing positions, trying to get away from that pain.
Some relief,
And just nothing works, you know.
Right. So. Okay, well, I'm just going to hang in there then. I think maybe try the acidification. I had an unrelated question for Dr. Mixon. I know you run a bit. Do you know what your VO2 max is?
You know, I do not know what it is right now.
Okay.
Hang on, we're going to take a quick break. It's quarter after, but we'll be back and I'll chat with the folks about VO2 max.
Okay, VO2 max. All right, we'll be back with more Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there. And if you have a question for the doctors, here is that number to get in. Phone lines are open for you at 206-421-5757. That's 206-421-5757. We'll be right back. It's Leading Edge Medicine. Good morning. Lynette here, live in the studio with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon. We were talking to Ken, and he brought up something called a VO2 max.
Yeah. And this is a measure of how much oxygen you will consume, and your body is keeping up with it. So it's in a state in aerobic metabolism, the maximum workload you can do. And so the velocity of oxygen maximum consumption, that's VO2 max.
Okay. That's what that is.
Yeah. And the higher your VO2 max, obviously, the better shape your heart, your lungs, your blood vessels, your muscles are all working in concert. And if any of those things are going bad, VO2 max drops.
Oh, okay.
Do you have a running watch, Dr. Mixon?
You know, I had until I changed my phone, and I've never gotten my Apple Watch to sync with the new phone. I've either got to change it to a newer Apple Watch or get one of my tech guys to upgrade it for me.
But my Apple Watch. Get a Garmin watch.
Yeah. Well, my Apple is about four generations old. So, you know, it does heart rate and it does oxygenation, but the You know, the newer ones, I think, are better.
I was just curious as to what your level was since you're in such good shape.
I don't know where it is right now, but I do know, because I have not checked a formal VO2 max in years and years and years. It is one of those things, though, that I am actively contemplating and putting into the office for our patients. The problem is where to find enough room for it. You know, the Tacoma Clinic
definitely has no space.
Yeah, there's simply no space for it down there at all.
You'll have to move the whole clinic.
Well, we are going to move the clinic.
But not this week.
We have to wait. when the lease in Tacoma expires, we will have built a new clinic for them.
Definitely need to move them, yes.
Okay. We've just got a big new clinic up here in Kirkland, and I built it with lots of, I thought, extra space.
Oh, yeah, room to grow?
We're going to have like 5 extra offices. But then when everybody moved in, it's, I want that one. I'll take that one. We're going to use this one for that. And all of a sudden, all my offices are gone.
Gone. Yeah, and I haven't even picked out mine yet.
We haven't even finished the lobby yet.
But to put the VO2 max equipment in, I'm going to have to kick somebody out of an office, and that's going to rankle somebody. But anyway, it is something I want to add to the clinics, because I would love to have a VO2 max on every new patient when they come in, and then check them in 6 months and a year and see how much we're actually improving their function.
That's good.
That's a good idea.
Yeah.
Yesterday, I was watching some of the best runners in the nation run, and I'm wondering what their VO2 max is.
Oh, God.
And probably the upper 60s for the women and upper 70s for the men.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah.
Mine's 44, and I'm 72 years old, and I can't keep up with the young people anymore.
No, you can't, but I got to tell you what, you're in the top 1% of 74-year-olds.
That's awesome.
You know, you can kick the butt of 99 out of 100 74-year-olds.
Way to go, Ken.
Who wants to do that? I want to kick the butt of 24-year-olds.
You should.
Yeah, really, he wants to kick the 24-year-olds.
You should have them do your DNA age. I would love to know what it is.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
Yes.
So have them draw your blood and get your MyDNA, and it'll look at your DNA methylation. You know, tell us how your genetic material is doing. So,
I'm going to take pop a handful of Advils here, probably 3 or 4, and head off to another cross-country meet today.
All right. Okay, my friend, you take care.
Right now. All right, thank you. Bye-bye.
Let's get your stem cells tuned up and fix that cartilage if we can, all right?
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you for your call there, Ken. Okay, and we're going to go to Charlie now in Buckley. He's got some questions for us as well. Hi, Charlie.
Hey, good morning, everyone.
Yes.
I have a question about, by the way, years ago, I have a friend, his father, he had kidney stones, and the doctor turned around and, you know, one of those small little trampolines?
Yes.
That guy, you know, advised, you know, my dad, my friend's father, to jump up and down that every morning.
Okay. I don't know if it'll work. No, I haven't, but, you know, what the hell?
Yeah. Let's get a trampoline for the office.
Yeah.
Right. No. But the dirty thing is, I heard this guy said that he was on Eliquis a couple of, I don't know, half hour, 45 minutes ago.
Yeah.
And he was saying he couldn't take resveratrol?
Well, resveratrol is an anticoagulant. It's very mild, but in low doses, it's probably safe enough. But if you're going to try to get your stem cells tuned up, you need higher doses. And we were talking to him about his joints and stem cell therapy and stuff. And so, you know, the resveratrol was something that we wanted him to have a high dose of, and he can't do it on Eliquis because it will thin the blood a little more and raise the risk of bleeding.
I see. So what do you think about 100 milligrams a day?
That's a modest dose. You know, our high-dose pills are 350 milligrams per capsule, and I take 3 of them a day. So from my dose and Eliquis would not go well together.
But does 100 do anything for him?
I saw a study in which 150 a day, 75 milligrams twice a day.
Okay.
In menopausal women, increased the blood flow to their brain over the course of a year.
Okay.
So I see.
So it does have an impact, at least on blood flow.
Okay.
In menopausal women. So, you know, 100 is a third less than that study.
Mm.
And that's the lowest dose I've seen in a study that got a measurable physiologic effect. Mm. But even 75 twice a day had a very significant effect on intracranial blood flow in menopausal women.
Mm. Interesting. Sure. Okay.
So I just wondered about that because I myself am on Eliquis now. I've been on it for just about a year. I had the blood clot. And I'm thinking I want to get rid of that and maybe just take fish oil and aspirin.
Well, the omega-3s, the fish oil is a lot safer than the aspirin. You know, aspirin results in gastrointestinal bleeding in a significant percentage of people. So unless you're taking really low doses. Yeah.
Right. It doesn't affect me like that. So I'm glad you answered my question because, see, I have my wife on the 100 resveratrol. And, of course, she takes, CoQ10, too.
Because she's on CoQ10.
Yeah, she's on a statin. It's an injectable statin every 2 weeks. Repatha. And, he's kind of allergic to the other statins.
Well, and some people are.
Well, that Repatha, I'm telling you, it's a miracle deal. I mean, her cholesterol's excellent. Excellent. Mm-hmm.
It was such a new thing and such a life-saving thing in cardiology for people that have high cholesterol and are at risk for disease and could not take statins. So the PCSK9 inhibitors were really life-changing for many people.
Mm-hmm.
Sure,
that's what
sure.
Repatha is. Yeah, a great necessity, really, at this for some people. And, you know, cardiovascular disease is rampant. So
number one killer in America.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You bet. I got, you know, history. My father, my grandfather, even my grandfather on the other side. But anyway, I thank you very much, and you guys all have a happy Halloween.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Charlie, for your call. We're going to take a break here in just a couple minutes, but wanted to remind you about something coming up in November at the clinics. Very important. November is the month of pancreatic cancer awareness, which is why we have decided once again to do the gallery test at all three of the clinics. Now, next Saturday, we will be doing the gallery test and the HA, which is the health analysis appointment for you in our Linwood Clinic. Okay, Dr.
Yumel. That's right. Yep. Mm-hmm. We're discounting the gallery test to $1,100 with the health analysis visit, and we'll give a free bag of a relief factor.
Wonderful.
But please call so we can have enough team members there for you because this is an important service. It's important test to do. It's the only test available for early detection of cancer, and pancreatic cancer particularly, this test is good at detecting, and this is a disease that is detected too late.
Yes.
Too often.
Yep. Yes. And then we'll do this again at our Tacoma and New Kirkland Clinic 3 weeks from today, which is November the 18th. But again, you need to make an appointment for this. Very important. It was so popular when we did this earlier this year. We thought, bring it back. So, if you'd like to go to our Linwood Clinic for this appointment for the gallery and the HA, that's the health analysis that we talk about here at Longevity, and also a bag of relief factor for you, then November 4th, that's the date, make an appointment. Here's the number to call, 866-86-YOUNG. That's 866-86-YOUNG. When we get back, we will talk with Valerie and Derek. Stay right there. We're back
It's Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. We're so glad that you're here. Taking the phone calls today, and we have room for you, too, at 206-421-5757. And we are headed over to Issaquah. We have Valerie on the line. Welcome, Valerie. Good morning.
Thank you, and good morning. I'm calling today regarding Alzheimer's. For those of you who are not familiar out there in the listening audience, we had a genotype test done on my husband, and he's APOE3/4. And I'm calling to, among other things, determine if there are additional tests or if they're even necessary with the results of that test. And what does this mean for our children?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Have you done your genome?
No, I have not.
Okay. Let me just explain APO epsilon to folks a little bit. There is a gene, and every human being has two of them. We are APO epsilon 2223344. Okay. So we have a variety of combinations of, that are possible. Interestingly, people that are 2-2 or 2-3 have a very, very low risk of cognitive decline in late life. They have a somewhat higher risk of cancers, but a lower risk of of cognitive decline or dementia. 3 is kind of the mid-range, so a 3-3, which is what I am. We are not especially increased risk of cognitive decline or cancer, but I've always said we are a we 3-3s are an equal opportunity dier. We can we can die either way. Okay, so the 2-2s, we know that they're more likely to go by cancer and almost no chance of dementia. 3-3s, we can go either way, and 4-4, 50% of them have dementia by age 60.
And what about the 3-4?
3-4 is in between. They have an increased risk of cognitive decline and dementia more than the general population, but not as high as a 4-4.
Uh-huh.
And so you get one of these from your mother and one from your father. Okay. So you ask about your kids. Okay. Mm-hmm. Your husband can donate either a 3 or a 4 to your children, and you can donate one of whatever you've got. If you're a 3-3, you can only give a 3.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So if we assume for a moment you're the 3-3, which is the most common, you can only give a 3, and your husband can give either a 3 or a 4, which you see the statistical odds there. Okay? So we want 2s and 3s as much as possible when it comes to cognitive situation.
I guess I would ask at this point, are there any other tests, or really are they even necessary once we've got this APOE gene identified?
No, once you've identified the APOE gene, you know what your statistical population now, what we want to do is minimize his individual risk. Okay, this is, remember, statistics apply to populations, not to individuals. Okay,
sure.
If you get dementia, it's not an 8%, it's 100% for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I mean, so what we want to do is, now that we know that there is a increased statistical risk, how do we minimize his individual risk? And that's what we have to shoot for, okay? And there are several things that we know that will lower his risk of dementia. One is to stay lean. Every extra pound of body fat raises his risk of dementia.
Okay.
He should avoid the things that...
He's very lean now, but I don't know if this is too late.
Well, if he's not demented yet, it's not too late.
Okay, well, he is, and so that's why we're in this pickle that we're in today.
But that's the problem. So lean muscle, he wants as much muscle mass as possible. Working muscle produces over 300 things we refer to as myokines, and they include a big dose of brain-derived neurotropic factors that actually help you to grow new brain tissue. So physical activity, physical exercise, and that includes weightlifting, swimming, things that really kind of stress him a bit. They actually allow you to grow new brain tissue. Okay, so that's a good one. Okay, resveratrol increases blood flow to the brain and helps to prevent senescent cells from forming in the brain that predispose you to dementia and to help to improve your cognition. Okay, so
excellent.
So resveratrol is a biggie. How bad is his cognitive decline right now?
I'd probably say a 3-4. There are many days that he looks at me and he's not really certain who I am. And we've been married for 49 years.
Yeah, so that's pretty extreme.
It's pretty extreme, and it's taken a real nosedive as we've downsized from a 4-bedroom home to a 2-bedroom apartment.
Yes.
Can't manage that much space.
No. Sadly, that is very true. When people are moved from their familiar surroundings to a new place, they really do decline precipitously.
They do rapidly, I was just thinking, because there's another compound that we know helps in age-related cognitive decline, but is not so useful with overt dementia, and that is citicoline, sold under the brand name Cognizine. But that's probably not going to help him a whole lot.
And one final question I guess I would have is, of course, he's curious as to how he came up with the genotype that he did. Both of his parents have passed. Is there any testing that gives them any clue where this came from?
Not really, no. I mean, we know it came from his mother and his father. And, you know, that's about all we can do. Yeah.
Okay. Well, very good. Well, I have my hands full. I thank you for the time that you've taken here. And our children, again, just to recap, our children are dependent upon what they get from him as well as from me. And
that's right.
So therefore, I should be taking care to take those tests myself.
Yes, you take this test, and that'll predict. Of course, the kids can take their test. It's real simple. Just to spit in the bottle.
For anybody that's interested, we do offer the DNA age as part of our health analysis visit. So, you can come in, make an appointment. We'll do it in our clinics. $595 includes it all. That's a pretty big deal. Yeah. But anyway.
That's a pretty big deal, very big deal. And the last thing is that I'm concerned about them having those tests done and paying insurance for fear that any record of that becomes permanent. And so therefore it makes it difficult for them going forward getting health insurance or life insurance.
Right. And that's why, and unfortunately, if insurance pays for the doctor visit, insurance has a legal right to the information. It's one of the joys that we don't accept insurance at our clinic, because we are one of the few clinics in the country where you still have patient privacy. We don't tell anybody anything about you without your written instructions to do so.
Wow. Nice.
Yes.
Very nice.
So.
And I think underappreciated.
Okay. Thank you, ma'am.
Thanks for the call, Valerie.
Bye-bye.
All right, you hear the music. We're going to take a quick call and then back with Derek, Ellie, and Greg in just a moment. This is Leading Edge Medicine. Stay right there.
Don't tell my heart, my aching-breaking heart. I just don't think he'd understand. And if you tell my heart, my aching-breaking heart, he might blow up and kill this man.
Now, see, this one, we need to be doing a little line dance.
Here you go.
That's why. I'm wearing my boots today.
I'm wearing the plaid.
We don't have room for line dancing in this little studio.
I guess that's why we'll have to build
a bigger studio so we can do line dancing.
Yes. Okay.
We'll all do the boot scoot boogie.
Boot scoot boogie.
Oh, believe it or not, Leading Edge Medicine here. I'm Lynette, along with Dr. Samira Umat and Dr. Jerry Mixon taking your calls. We are headed to Bonnie Lake, and Derek is on the line. Good morning, Derek.
Hello, Derek.
Hi. I think the name's not quite right. It's Doug.
Oh, Doug.
Okay.
Well, I don't know if it's if it's Lynette's penmanship or it was the
Doug.
But go ahead, Doug. How can we help?
So my concern is I have general herpes. I've had them for literally years. I use valacyclovir
for the acute outbreaks. Yep.
Yeah. And I'm wondering if there's anything else I can do to not necessarily, I know they're not curable as I understand it, but
well, I'm not sure that's true.
That will provide any kind of relief.
Yes.
Both before I get them, that is, get an outbreak, because I have quite a few symptoms before they break out. Mm-hmm. And then after they seem to settle, after they break out, then there's still a time of discomfort there.
Yes. Well, it's the nerve irritation, because these basically grow in the nerve root. Yes, there are things we can do. And you've said the magic word, which is valacyclovir, but you're only using it for acute outbreaks, and that's your problem. Back in my country doctor days, I once practiced in a town that had a prison, and we had a very high instance of folks with genital herpes. And what I found with my folks is that if they will take their valacyclovir every day, not just for the outbreak, take it every single day, within a few months, you'll find that your outbreaks will become much less common. I had people that were having outbreaks on a monthly basis, and after a few months, they would say, gee, I haven't had one for 2 months. And then it would go to every 3 months, and then every 4 months. And then if they continued it, I had many people that had gone from multiple outbreaks a year to none at all for at least a year.
So, Jerry, what was your dosing schedule for them?
I used basically a full dose. The valacyclovir, I'm forgetting if the valacyclovir is 200 or 500, or if it's the famacyclovir.
I'm taking 500.
Yeah, so because I know one of them comes as a 2 and the other comes as a 5. And I haven't written either of these drugs in years.
Yeah, but so you kept them at the same dose?
I kept them at
the
full
dose. Loading dose and no change in the dose.
But see, valacyclovir is an artificial amino acid that the virus incorporates into its protein coat. And it makes a defective protein coat that does not replicate well. It doesn't invade the tissues. Mammals can't use that amino acid. So it's basically worthless for people. But you want to get your blood level high enough so that every time the virus shows up and tries to replicate, it makes bad virus. It makes bad viral coats. And that way, as long as it stays in your system, every time there's an outbreak, you lower your viral load. And over time, you lower the viral load so much that you just stop having outbreaks.
So, Doug, how have you been using the valacyclovir?
I use it usually when I know that the outbreak is imminent.
So you use a 500 milligram once a day for...
500, the way it... Yeah, so 500 twice a day for 3 days, and then that's all the prescription says about it.
Right, so that's not enough.
Yeah, okay. And it's just not enough. And because of the way this drug works, if you really want to get rid of your infection, you have to keep it in your bloodstream. And every time you get an outbreak, it'll actually lower your viral load, and the next outbreak will lower it more, and the next outbreak. And so eventually the outbreaks become less and less and less frequent, and eventually they stop. I've had people that had been on it long term and had gone for 18 months, two years without an outbreak. And when I did their Western blot analysis looking for antibody to the virus, it just wasn't there anymore.
Hmm. Yeah, I wonder what the side effects are and why we kind of shy away from giving longer prescriptions. Because I know that physicians don't like to do it
it's
for very
cost.
Long period. It's just cost.
The insurance companies don't want to pay for it.
True. Yeah.
I don't think it's real expensive, though, either.
Well, not anymore. Now, see, when it first came out, it was quite pricey. And so in those days when it was pricey, I used the acyclovir. But the acyclovir had to be used up to five times a day because it was very short-acting. And but then the valacyclovir and famcyclovir came out, but they were less frequent dosing. And I couldn't remember. One of them was twice a day and one was once a day. And so it may be the famcyclovir that's once a day.
Yeah,
would be even simpler.
I mean, I've even heard of physicians doing a loading dose for prevention. Like if people are in a certain situation, because stress will cause an outbreak. So if they're going to have, like they used to come for some treatments and they knew that every time they had the treatment, they would have a breakout. So they would get a prescription from the primary care provider before they had the treatment so that they wouldn't have the outbreak.
Yeah, so you know the physiology of this medication and this virus are such that you can get to the point that you don't have outbreaks anymore.
Right. I've heard you say that before, but I had forgotten that.
But you have to be willing to pay for the medicine because the insurance company won't. They will only pay for it with an acute outbreak.
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'd say go to goodrx.com. And put in valacyclovir and then put in famcyclovir, okay? And see how good a price you can get on either of them and make that your go-to. But then you got to get a physician that'll write the prescription for 30 days at a time, refills for a year.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I actually haven't had an outbreak for... I would say easily, I don't know, 9 to 12 months. And then all of a sudden, I just had one real recently here. They're not as frequent as they used to be, but, you know, after 40 years, maybe it wore itself out. I don't know.
Yeah. Or you're developing better resistance to the virus. Yeah. You know, because some people
I've never worked in or been an occupant of prison, so I'm...
No. But, you know, it's a very common virus. There was a study several decades ago where they went to a suburban gynecologic clinic, and they simply tested every woman who came in with antibodies to see if they were carrying antibodies to the virus. 42% of the women... had the virus.
Right, but they're asymptomatic.
Right. So it's a small percentage, you know, it's like 6 or 8% of women have ever had an outbreak, but 42% of the women, at least in that clinic, carried the virus. Most people have an immune system that will keep it suppressed, but not everybody.
Right, if there's a stressor or something happens and you express it.
Right.
Yeah, sometimes if I'm laxed in my physical activity and then I resume it at a level that I was at, that has seemingly caused an outbreak.
Sure.
Oh, so you're stressing yourself.
Sudden increase in physical stress damps down the immune system transiently, but regular exercise boosts the immune system. So, yeah, that makes perfectly good sense.
Okay. All right.
All right. So, but you know, herpetic viruses, there's genital herpes and then the oral herpes. Mm-hmm. We used to call these herpes type 1, type 2.
Oh, yeah.
Right. When I was in medical school umpteen years ago, you know, we said, well, if it's on the lips, it's type 1, and if it's on the genitals, it's type 2. Now you find both viruses in both sites with equal facility, you know. It's just the way it is. It's a common virus. It's all over the place. And, you know, But there are ways to damp it down. You just have to be willing to put up the time and the money. So,
okay.
All right.
Well,
thank you for the call.
Thank you very much.
No, thank you, Doug.
Bye-bye.
All right. And that is our show today. Lots of different topics and lots of information with Dr. Jerry Mixon and Dr. Samiri Umat. We'll be back live in the studio again next Saturday. So we hope to see you then or hear you if you have a question. Ellie, Greg, we did not get to you today. So please call us back early in the show next week. We will all be here for that. All right. And don't forget, we do have two important dates coming up for the gallery test and health analysis. That is at our Linwood Longevity Clinic, November 4th. That's next Saturday. You do need to get an appointment if you'd like to join us for that. And then again in Tacoma and our new Kirkland Clinic, November 18th. That is 3 weeks from today. You have a great rest of your weekend, and we will all be back for Leading Edge Medicine, brought to you by Longevity Medical Clinics. Find out more about us. Go online. In fact, that's where you can get a free health analysis by going to lmclinic.com and sign up right there. We have a calendar for you and information on all of our clinics. Pick the day and time that works the best for you. lmclinic.com. And you can get to know us a little bit better, too. Have a great rest of your weekend. Enjoy that sunshine. We'll be back in November, which is next Saturday. Goodbye.